Welcome back, my friends. You're listening to episode 519. My name's Alex Pardo, and I got a jam-packed show for you today where I'm going to share with you how to best utilize and leverage direct mail to attract more deals. Now, I want to go ahead and share with you that this was actually a presentation I was asked to speak to a mastermind community that I'm a part of with the self-storage business. And so I put together a presentation because, you know, direct mail has been responsible for, my guess is, well over six figures in revenue throughout the years, real estate deals. And, you know, I think there's a right way to do direct mail. I think I've definitely done it the wrong way. I've learned a lot. I've bumped my heads. I've spent, I can't even tell you how many hundreds of thousands of dollars throughout the years on direct mail. So fortunately, I've picked up a thing or two. And what I want to do is I want to go ahead and share that with you on the podcast. Now, specifically, what I'm going to be talking about is, you know, how to get your letter opened, right? How to make the phone ring with great leads. Now, again, this was catered for the self-storage business. But even if you have no interest in that particular asset class, these strategies and principles are applicable to, I don't care if it's single family, I don't care what asset class it is. I mean, these are direct mail principles and strategies that I've learned over the years from some of the best people like Dan Kennedy. I mean, just, I'm a student of marketing. And while I still have so much to learn, again, I think you can glean some insight and some things that can really help you with your direct mail campaigns moving forward. So I spoke specifically about, you know, the exterior of your mail piece and how it should look and feel personal, and what are some tips and strategies so that you can go ahead and accomplish that. The interior of the letter, you know, even the minor details like the thickness of the paper, the color of the paper, these are things that throughout the years I have spent a lot of money just split testing, you know. And speaking of split testing, I talk about the right way and the wrong way to split test, and why, you know, the wrong way is split testing multiple variables at a time, and why it's worth it for you to take a little bit of additional time to split test so that you know what's working and what's not working. And then I talk about marketing copy. You know, I talk about how to position yourself, how to position the seller, how what you're saying is what you're not saying is just as important, if not more important, than what you're actually saying. You know, talk about the structure of the letter, right? Like, how long should the letter be? What have I found to work? What should the call to action be? And I think this will surprise many of you, because I can't tell you how many direct mail pieces I've seen throughout the years, and they basically all say the same thing. They basically all have the same call to action, and how this one slight tweak can mean a significant bump in your response rate and just the overall feel of the communication and the start of the relationship with the seller, whether it's a homeowner, whether it's a seller of a self-storage facility, or whatever the case might be. And then I shared some bonus content on how you can instantly automate your return mailers. For some of you, this can be an absolute game changer, and this was born out of necessity. You know, not too long ago, we were sending 35,000 plus mailers a month, and it was extremely painful for us because we had a certain percentage of those come back. And when you have hundreds and hundreds of return mailers come back, sometimes it takes a full-time person just to start to, you know, go through the process of skip tracing and figuring out how to contact the owner. Well, we found a way to instantly automate that process, and I share that in this presentation and obviously now with you on the podcast. So I want to encourage you, if you want to catch the video, you should be able to catch this video on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/AlexPardo. And without further ado, let's hop into episode 519 on the Flip Empire Show.
You're listening to Flip Empire, the show committed to helping real estate entrepreneurs who want to build their empire without sacrificing their life. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Karen, I appreciate the opportunity to kind of share some of the things I've learned throughout the years with regards to direct mail and basically how to get our phone to ring, how to generate better quality leads. Direct mail has been responsible, at least in my house buying business, for a lot of revenue throughout the years. And I've made a ton of mistakes. So I'm going to share some of those things with you, and I'm going to share what's worked, what hasn't worked. And ultimately, what I want you guys to walk away with is just better tools, better strategies to utilize direct mail to attract the self-storage deals that we're all after. So as with any presentation, I want to kind of start with the goals, with the objectives. And with direct mail marketing, it's no different. I've always been somebody that I like to think about the end in mind. What's my desired outcome? What's the goal? And then it's so much easier to reverse engineer the process. But ultimately, with direct mail, we need to get that letter opened. So something like this if a homeowner or a self-storage facility owner or any person that you're trying to send mail to, if they don't open it, it doesn't matter how great the copy is. It doesn't matter how incredible the offer is for that person. It's as good as throwing your money in the toilet. So the first thing is you got to figure out how are you going to get your letter opened. And then the second thing is obviously in the letter, you're not trying to buy their self-storage facility. You just want to invite them to have a conversation. So ultimately the call to action that you want them to take is just to pick up the phone and call you. So those are the two main objectives. I like to try to simplify things as much as possible. When it comes to direct mail, we want to get our letter open and we just want the phone to ring. So how do you accomplish this? And I don't know why at the top it's a little fuzzy, but hopefully you guys can read that. How do we accomplish this? When I think about direct mail, I think about the exterior of the mail piece and I think about the interior, right? Interior specifics like the paper, the font you use, your copy, all those details matter when it comes to direct mail. The first thing is when we look at the exterior, you know, I just had an opportunity to interview a very smart guy that has 4+ decades in the real estate investing space. And one of the quotes that he said that jumped out at me, he said, sameness is the enemy. So when it comes to direct mail, I want you to think about that. Sameness is the enemy. Be different and stand out. If you're sending the same type of mail piece, if you're sending the same type of copy that generally says the same thing, the chances are it's become white noise to these self-storage owners and it's probably ending up in the trash. So one of the things you want to do is zig when other people are zagging. How do you do that? You have to make your direct mail look and feel personal. So if I was to kind of poll you guys and I was to bring up these two, which one are you more likely to open?
The black one.
The black one, because it's a little bit different. You see this more times than not. You probably get something like this every single day. And so this is just one way to make it look and feel different. I don't know if you guys can see the stamp, but it's a Scooby-Doo stamp, right? That's different. It stands out. It invokes curiosity. That's ultimately what you're looking for when somebody receives your mail piece. Does it look and feel personal? There's a variety of ways you can accomplish this. I personally like invitation style envelopes like this. I like oversized envelopes. So whether it's like a 6x9 or anything like that, while you are paying a few extra nickels for that, my opinion and my experience has been that in the long run, it's going to actually yield more calls and more opportunities, and more at-bats means better opportunity to connect on a deal. And you got to remember, you know, we're in a business that one deal and your entire direct mail for the rest of your life is pretty much paid for. So how else can you stand out and be different with the exterior of your piece? I talked about the stamp. So here's, let me see if I can bring up another one. Here's an example of another stamp that I'm currently testing, the love stamp. One of my best converting direct mail campaigns was about a year and a half ago. We were targeting owners. At the time, this was single family owners, but the same concepts apply to this. And all of our data had told us that the majority of the deals and the houses that we were buying, the owners were 65+ years of age, and over 65% of them were male. So one of the things that I wanted to test is I went online and I found a forever stamp of Marilyn Monroe in a very like sexy pose, right? And she was showing a little bit of cleavage and it was just different. And so I said, let's order a bunch of those Marilyn Monroe forever stamps. We used it and our campaign has absolutely exploded. When I tell you we got almost triple the amount of calls and we didn't change anything else in the direct mail piece. So that was a direct result of us testing a regular, you know, American flag stamp versus the Marilyn Monroe stamp. So these minor details might not seem like much, but when they stack up, you're going to see different results in your mailing campaigns. I'm a big fan of actually handwriting the mailing and the return address. Now, I don't think your time is much more valuable, obviously, so I don't recommend that you do that. But I've hired people for a buck an envelope to basically write out the mailing and the return address in handwritten font, and actually sign my name, which I'll get to in a second here. It's called the wet ink signature. So I've paid a buck a piece for somebody to write my return address, to write the owner's mailing address, and to sign my name. So I have found that that has produced better results than the easier, cheaper route to go is a simple handwritten font. And I can tell you that there's been a big difference in the results from a response rate perspective when somebody actually handwrites it. a rule of thumb that I like to ask myself whenever I'm, you know, putting together a direct mail piece, particularly a letter. Number one, I ask myself, does this look commercial? If I got this, would I be compelled? Would I be intrigued? Would I want to open this? Or would I just probably chuck it in the trash? Because the majority of your mail is ending up in the trash. The second thing I do is I usually give it to my grandmother, my mother-in-law, my mother, somebody who's much older than me. And I ask them, if you got this in the mail, would you open it? And that's usually, you're going to get a pretty good sense for, and actually, I'm sorry, let me, so I can actually see you guys. You're going to get a better sense for, is your piece going to be opened? If you ask and kind of pull people, you know, so another thing I like to do is I'll take something like this and I'll stack it with a bunch of mail and I'll just throw it on my kitchen counter and I'll see, hey, what jumps out? What pops out? Does this stand out? And usually those clues will give you an indication if you're on the right path with regards to the exterior of your direct mail piece. Now, with regards to the interior, their first step is you just want them to open it. With regards to the interior, I'm even testing things like the thickness of the paper versus just a regular sheet of paper, the color of the paper. And then I talked about a wet ink signature. I would avoid black, believe it or not. We've been in my house buying business. We were pretty maniacal about split testing. And I'll talk about split testing here in a few minutes. And blue or red ink outperforms black ink every single day of the week and twice on Sunday. I don't know why that is, but it just does. Now, let me...
Is there any difference between blue and red?
It's pretty insignificant. It's basically about the same in our testing. So speaking of testing, in my opinion, my humble opinion, there's a right way to split test. There's a wrong way to split test. Now, I think the elephant going on, the elephant in the room or what's probably bouncing around in your head is like, Alex, that seems like a pain in the ass. I don't want to take the extra step. I'll tell you that it's worth your time because if you do campaign A, and then 2 months later, you do campaign B, and every single 2-3 months, you do campaigns. How do you know which ones, if you're not testing and you're not tracking, how do you know which one is producing the best results for you? So it's worth taking a little bit of extra time to split test. Now, I want to kind of direct your attention to the first two pictures here. This is split test one. You'll notice that there's only one variable that is changing, which is the stamp. So I was curious, does the Scooby-Doo stamp produce more calls or does the love stamp produce more calls? I actually thought it was going to be Scooby-Doo. I was wrong. The love stamp produced more calls. So after enough testing of that, I then went on to my second A-B split test. Now I'm keeping the love stamp, but I'm changing the color of the pen, gold versus silver. And again, I was wrong. I thought gold was going to produce better, but silver actually won out in the second split test. Now, here's the wrong way to do it. I'm changing two variables here. So let's just say Scooby-Doo wins out. How will I know if it was because of Scooby-Doo or because of the red font? I don't know because I've changed multiple variables. What I should have done, and I just took a picture of this for illustration purposes, the right way to split test would be to change this Scooby-Doo for a love and now split test silver versus red. You get what I'm saying? So whenever you split test, you don't want to change multiple variables. So whenever something wins, that's what's called your control piece. Your control piece is what you move on to the next test, and then you want to test that against something else. Any questions as far as A-B split testing or anything I've covered so far? No, you're good? Okay. Karen, I'm sorry. Do you still see the recording thing? Because it's not on my screen anymore.
Yes, I still see it. I have one question. Do you the Marilyn Monroe stamp, have you tried that? Or are you going to try some other stamps? Or are you going to
I haven't yet. But yeah, so usually what I like to do is I'll test. So this is what the post office had available when I bought these about a month and a half ago. Okay. But yeah, I will at some point jump online and see if I can find some. One of the things I like to do is I'll find a site that has a bunch of different stamps. And I'll let my eye determine which stamp to buy. So I'll look at a bunch of stamps and I'll say, where does my eye naturally go to? Like what jumps out and pops out at me?
Cool. Thank you.
No problem. Now, with regards to marketing copy, Chris Michaels had an awesome, awesome presentation to the SRU community in February, I want to say. And he went really deep for like 20, 30 minutes just on the copy and the psychology. So This presentation in conjunction with that, I think can really kind of beef up your direct mail campaigns and the results that you guys are looking for. But I wanted to touch on a few things and just highlight some things from my experience. Again, you want it to feel personal. You know, when the seller or when the facility owner receives your mail piece, are they going to think that you took the time to write and send them that piece? Or do they just automatically assume, hey, this is, it looks mass produced, it's going out to a bunch of people? You want it to look and feel personal. One of the things that I like to do is just use the first name and not the last name, because it's different. Usually when you get something in the mail, it says, you know, Kevin White, right? RJ Ewing. It'll say your full name, but if I wrote you a piece and it just said RJ, again, it's a small detail that makes you stand out from everybody else. And by the way, I'm split testing this right now as well. First name versus first and last name. Because I know that with single family, first name works better, but I haven't tested it with storage. Now, you got to think about when it comes to your marketing, when it comes to your letter, you got to think about positioning. Positioning is really important from a psychology standpoint. So you got to think about how you position yourself and how are you positioning the seller. With regards to positioning yourself, do you want to come across as a big company, a big corporation, or do you want to come across as just a regular dude or dudette? I don't even know if that's a word, but I threw it in there. Like, are you a regular person or do you want to portray yourself as a big company? I don't have the right answer. I prefer, when it comes to single family, which that's obviously not what we're going after, the answer was always and twice on Sunday, I just want to be a regular dude, right? I don't want to be a big company. When it comes to hybrid, because we're dealing with, you know, usually a little bit more of a sophisticated seller in most cases, not always, I'm testing kind of a hybrid approach. And the hybrid approach is, I want to be personable. I want to be relatable. I want to be a regular person, but I also want to come across very professional and very credible. I want to, in my copy, I want to make sure that the seller knows, hey, this is somebody that knows what they're doing. They have experience. They have the ability to purchase my facility, but they're also just a regular person. So to me, that's kind of the best of both worlds when it comes to direct mail, as it relates to speaking to owners of self-storage facilities. You also want to think about how you're going to position the seller. You know, so one of the things I like to include in one of my paragraphs, which I'll talk about the structure of my letter, is I recognize the fact that they probably don't need to or want to sell. Because when people get letters, oftentimes it's very threatening. And one of the objections I commonly hear when people call us from our mail is, well, who told you my property's for sale? Or where is it online? Like, how did you get my information? So I like to diffuse some of the common objections that I'm most likely to hear by positioning the seller and letting them know that, hey, I understand that you probably don't need to or want to sell. And that actually puts them in a position of strength. You know, so it, your piece has to be very non-threatening for you to get the best results. And then lastly, you want to consider what you're saying and what you're not saying is just as important, if not more important. So what you're saying, who are you? So basically a quick introduction. Why are you writing to them? In other words, what's your intention? And again, the tone should be very non-threatening. Everything in my copy conveys that, hey, this is on your timeline. It's on your terms. And I'm trying to buy your facility. There's an invitation to have a conversation if that might be of any interest to you. And then what you're not saying. I personally am not a fan of including copy in your mail piece that talks about an offer, that talks about a deadline or a timeline or terms or how you want to buy it, when you want to buy it, nothing like that. Why do you ask that? Or why do you say, hey, Alex, why don't you want to include that information? When you say stuff like that, you're kind of eliminating other possibilities. Like, what if that particular seller, what if you say, hey, I'm looking to buy a facility in the next 60 days? What if that seller has no desire to sell in 60 days, but they do have a desire to sell in 6 to 12 months? You're cutting off that potential possibility by specifically saying, hey, I am looking to buy a facility in 60 days, right? Or if you say, hey, I'm offering cash for your facility, what if you can get significantly better deal by structuring it in terms with seller financing? So I would avoid any specifics about an offer, you know, how you'd like to buy it and when you'd like to buy it. By the way, there's going to be a slide here just for Q&A. So, or you can just feel free to jump in. I put this here, do not copy. One of the mistakes I see a lot of investors make is like, I'm an open book. I'm willing to share anything with you guys. The reason you're not going to see my mail piece on the screen isn't because I don't want you to use it, because I don't want to share. It's because I don't think that would do you or me or the seller any justice. Why would we want to send the same exact mail piece to, chances are, probably the same seller? Like, you want this to be your own. So one of the things that, an exercise I would kind of challenge you guys with, and my guess is very few people will actually take the time to do it, is just take out a sheet of paper and a pen and think about if you were trying to speak to a friend of yours that owned a self-storage facility that you were interested in, how would you compose that letter? How would you write that letter if you were going to send it to a friend who owned a facility that you were interested in purchasing? Chances are that's going to be significantly better, even if you have no skills as a copywriter, than just swiping somebody's direct mail piece, because that's the easy thing to do and deploying that. So as a takeaway, I would challenge you guys to take out a sheet of paper and just write a simple page, you know, a half page to a page at most, and just be very, think about how you can portray yourself as somebody who's relatable, friendly, but also professional and credible at the same time. Now, as it relates, and there's a couple more slides here, and then I got some Q&A and then some bonus content for you if you're interested. The structure of the letter, very simple. I'm going to go ahead and hit the fast forward button to the bottom, what I just finished saying. You want to keep your letter to a half page, one page at the absolute most, but I really prefer a half page. Why? When somebody opens your piece, if there's a bunch of words on there, they're less likely to actually take the time to read it. But if it's 2-3 short paragraphs, anybody can read that in 30 seconds or less, right? So I highly encourage you to keep your letters to a half page. Logo versus no logo. You might ask, you, hey, what's better? As Mike Wagner would say, right? It depends. You got a split test. Right now, the letters I'm sending do not have a logo. In fact, I don't even have a logo for the self-storage business. So for right now, I'm not sending a logo. And then I like to keep it to 3 paragraphs, you know, 2-3 sentences in each paragraph. Paragraph 1, I'm introducing myself. Hey, my name's Alex Pardo, you know, et cetera. I'm in the process of looking for a self-storage facility. I convey a little bit of experience, credibility in that first paragraph. Paragraph 2, my intention. Hey, I'm reaching out to you to see if you might have any interest in having a conversation about your facility, right? And then in closing is the call to action. It's an invitation to have a conversation. It's an invitation to chat. I'm not saying, hey, call me now, call me within the next 7 days. All my language is very non-threatening. The communication is open-ended. There's no timeline or expiration date. In fact, I even use the words, whenever the time is right for you. And I acknowledge that this might not be the right time for them, but keep my letter on hand just in case anything may change in the future. And we've actually had quite a few property owners call us 6 months, 12 months, 2 years later and say, hey, I actually held on to your piece because you asked me to, believe it or not. So that's pretty much all I got, guys, as far as the direct mail is concerned. Any questions?
I have some questions. What company do you use to do your direct mail work?
So that's a good question. I'm going to get to one of the companies that I've used a lot. It's called Direct One, I believe is the name of their company. Now, for the first campaign that I did in the storage business a couple of months ago, where I bought the list from Data Axle, I used Yellow Letters Complete.
Okay.
And they actually hand wrote the return and mailing address. It was a wet ink signature. I paid $1.49 per piece. And that campaign did not produce results. And it wasn't because of the mail piece. It was because of the list. So as much as everything I've shared with you can have a profound positive impact on your results, remember, garbage in, garbage out. If you have shitty data, if you have a bad list, it doesn't, you know, I mean, the copy and the exterior, that can help open it and you'll get calls. But if they're crappy leads, they're crappy leads. So make sure that you're compiling a list that's accurate, that, you know, is targeting the people that you want to get in contact with.
Okay. I got a question, follow up on that list. That was something I was thinking about when you're split testing. When you split test like the, I know control for one variable or only change one variable, but are you sending to this, like, do you have a list of 5,000 and you're sending 2,500 of one type and 2,500 of another type?
So with self-storage, obviously those numbers are a lot smaller.
Right, right.
Yes. Yeah. So one of the things that you have to be careful, and I'm glad you brought that up, RJ, is when you split test, you have to have enough data like your sample size has to be big enough. In other words, if I was to just do a split test between, and I just sent out two or three pieces, or let's just call it four pieces. Let's just say I sent two pieces with Scooby-Doo and two pieces with Love. The sample size is nearly not big enough. So whatever results come back, I can't trust on that. But I think minimum 100, you know, if I was to send 50 of the Scooby-Doo and 50 of the Love, that'll pretty much give me a general sense. But yeah, to answer your question, there's a couple of different ways that I've done it. Let's say I have 500 records. I can either send out 250 with the split test A and 250 with the split test B, or if you give yourself enough time in the middle, let's say I'm traveling and let's say I don't want to be answering calls on my vacation. I might only send 250 today and I'll send the next 250 split test B in 30 to 45 days. Why? Because enough time has elapsed where chances are, you know, the calls will have enough distance in between them, so to speak.
And you think 100 is enough to split test? It seems pretty...
Look, I think that's a bare minimum. I think that's the absolute bare minimum. I certainly wouldn't split test. If you only have 50 records, I probably wouldn't be split testing, you know? Like, so when I sent out my data axle list, it was just over 1,000 and I split tested 500 and 500 basically.
Right. If you're talking like 1% response rate on 100, that's like one. And if you're trying to figure out the difference for a 0.5% better response rate, it's like, well, you 100, you can't even really tell.
No, I will tell you, because some of the elements that I've shared with you, don't be surprised if you see higher than a 1% response rate. Right. I'm not making a bold claim and saying, hey, you're going to have a 5-10% response rate just by implementing this. Again, with marketing, sometimes I think this is going to work and the exact opposite works. You just never know. You got to test.
Right. Cool.
Any other questions?
How often do you send?
So right now I'm sending storage every 2 months, but the truth is I haven't been doing enough direct mail when it comes to specifically storage to tell you what works best. I can tell you that in the single family business, which obviously that's not what we're interested in, we were sending every 30 days. With this, I'm probably going to land on anywhere between 2 to 3 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're going to do, so you'll do how many pieces every 2 to 3 months?
As many pieces as I can get, as many quality records as I can get. Right now, the goal is I've consistently been doing 20 a week. So as you can see here, I got a stack that I'm sending out today.
So you're now doing them yourself.
I have somebody that's helping me as far as like the handwriting, but yeah, sometimes if I don't have that, like if I need to hit that goal of 20 by the end of the week, then yeah, sometimes I'll take 5-10 minutes and I'll just like right now these pictures, that's actually my handwriting. So these I banged out because it's Friday and I didn't exactly had hit my quota yet.
Okay.
Yep. But I would recommend you don't do this. I would recommend you hire someone, pay them a buck. And I think it's well worth your time to pay somebody $1 a piece to handwrite the return address, the mailing address, which is not in these pictures, and the stamp, and then the wet ink signature. Okay. Let's say that process takes 1 to 2 minutes a piece. You know, do the math on how much time you're saving relative to the cost.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Tom just asked, how often do you send follow-up letters?
Tom, right now I'm doing every 2 months, but I don't have enough data to tell me yet like what's best. I'm probably going to settle on every quarter, every 3 months. Because again, one thing I've learned in the storage world is that things move at a much slower pace than I'm used to in the single family space. So I'm probably going to be sending every quarter. Right now I've been dripping for the last 3 weeks. I've been dripping 20 a week. And this is almost 2 months after I did my first data axle list.
Cool.
Any other questions, guys?
That's follow up, not new leads, as he said. So
we didn't really have a question, but we just wanted to say thank you because this definitely helped eliminate some confusion that we had on our end as to what would be the best method.
Awesome, Kalani. I'm glad to help. Yeah, and look, and with anything, just because I'm seeing positive results, you know, these things, sometimes it's hard to put your finger on, like if you and I were to send the same exact letter to a different list, but the same piece, I might see X results, you might see Y results. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of variables at different markets. Like when does it hit? I mean, there's so many components that change, which is why I'm a fan of constantly split testing to see, because if I can get a 1 to 2% improvement from campaign to campaign, that could yield significantly more calls. And again, we all know that it just takes one call to turn into a deal that can potentially change your life.
You know? Exactly.
Hey, Alex, I got a question. unmuted myself, and then my phone rang right about that time, of course. Two questions, actually. Number one, what kind of response rate are you seeing from your 20 a week? Because if you're even getting one phone call, that would be 5%, which is pretty huge. So I'm interested in that. And then two, are you using a CallRail phone number or something like that?
Yeah, good question. So you hit the nail on the head. Right now, I have sent out about 120 pieces. Mm-hmm. I've been at this for almost 5 weeks, and I'm basically getting a call every week.
Wow. Okay.
There was 1 week where I didn't get any calls. So I've gotten 4 calls. Who wants to do the quick math there for me? There's 4 calls out of 120 pieces, basically.
That's about 3.5%.
Yeah. So that's about what I'm seeing right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's better than the typical. I look, you know, last year when I ran the wholesaling operation, we were lucky to get 0.5% response rate, like lucky. So this is a significant improvement. As far as I'm not using a CallRail number right now, I'm using my personal cell phone, which is something I would have never done in my previous business.
Right.
But I also realized that I'm sending 20 a week. So if I get a call a week, I can take that all day long. I don't need to automate it and go through like this process that we did with a single family business. So not to mention, I want to take those calls. Like, I don't want to outsource that to somebody yet.
Yeah, I got you. The reason I ask about the CallRail numbers, because like myself, I'm not always going to be able to answer the call A, and I have my phone set up where if a number comes in, it's not in my contacts, it doesn't ring. Like, it goes straight to Google, screens it. So I guess I need to turn that off if I'm going to use my cell phone number.
Yeah. And you might want to just like modify your voicemail, you know? So yeah, right now I'm using my cell phone and it's been working fine. There's been very few instances where like I've gotten a call at an inconvenient time. And if I do, it is what it is. I'll just call them back, you know?
Appreciate it, Alex. Thanks for this. This is great, great stuff.
Yeah. If there's no other questions, I got some bonus content for you if we have the time and you guys are interested.
Yes, that'd be awesome.
All right, cool. So this was a presentation that I put together for another mastermind I was a part of, which was about a year to year and a half ago. So there might be some differences between when I presented on this and today. The general concept remains the same. And the takeaway is that many people don't even know that this is out there. One of the challenges I've had with direct mail is you send out a bunch of mail and then you're going to get 10 to 20% of them, say, that are returned. Well, it was such a pain point in my house buying business that we figured out a way to completely automate return mails. And that's kind of what I want to share with you here. There is something that most people are not aware of called electronic service requested, ESR. And basically, this is a service that the United States Postal Service provides that you can essentially, if you're working with like a reputable direct mail fulfillment company, ask them to include electronic service requested on your mail piece. So that would be included like on the envelope, that would be included on the postcard. And it's just this like ugly looking barcode here at the bottom, and it'll say electronic service requested. And basically what happens, let me go to my next slide here. What happens is instead of you getting the return mail, it'll go to the post office, it'll be compiled in a spreadsheet, and then it'll be emailed to you. So this was the company that when we were doing, you know, 30,000 plus pieces a month, this is the company that did it for us, Direct One. Jeff is the so you guys want to take a screenshot of this. Really good guy. They do millions and millions of mail pieces a month. And just they can set you up with an electronic return service account through the USPS. My understanding is that only direct mail fulfillment companies have the ability to set up this account through the post office, and individuals do not. Now, maybe that's changed. I don't know. But basically, this is what happens. They're going to email you 2 formatted spreadsheets on a weekly basis, and you no longer have to get the physically returned mail. So this is what that looks like. So these are people that I get 2 spreadsheets, people that moved and I get the updated address, and then people that it was undeliverable. So now think about it. Instead of getting all these physically returned mail pieces, it's already compiled in a spreadsheet and it's completely automated. Now you can send this off to go get skip traced or whatever you want to do with it. Again, this was for my single family business, but the same thing applies to anybody you're mailing, really. It doesn't really matter. I don't know what's going on here at the top. You're not missing anything at the top here, but they manage the process for you. So there's an SOP, a standard operating procedure. If you guys go to my website, flipempire.com/ERS, and use the password ascend, you can actually download the, let me share that with you guys. You can download the SOP, which is this right here. And it'll walk you through like what you need to do potentially to get it set up on your own. Or if you're working with a direct mail fulfillment company that just doesn't know how this process works, you can send them this standard operating procedure. All right, my friend. So I trust and hope that you got a lot of value out of that episode where I talked about how to leverage and utilize direct mail to attract deals. Now, what I want to do and what I want to challenge you with is just take one thing that I shared, whether it's split testing or whether it's the exterior of your mail piece, the interior of your mail piece, the copy. I mean, just pick one thing and go ahead and implement that ASAP and stay consistent with it, because I believe if you do and if you remain diligent over the long run, I can tell you that my experience is it will result in more leads, which is only going to lead to more opportunities, which can lead to more deals, more people you can help, more money you can make, and so on and so on. So now, this isn't one of those things that you implement and you're going to see an effect, you're going to see immediate results. That's just not the way it works. It's like hopping in the gym, right? You're not going to see results after a day or a week of working out. But again, if you remain consistent and you split test and you just keep at it and keep at it, you will see a bump in your response rate, which is going to, you're going to generate more leads. Again, lead to opportunities and so on and so on. So thank you for tuning in. I want to encourage you to subscribe to the podcast so that you're notified every Monday and Thursday when new episodes get released. And if I can help you in any way, whatever that may look like, you know, reach out to me. I'm looking to connect and grow with the right people that could be on the self-storage side of the business. You know, I'm having opportunities come my way, and so there may be some opportunity there for us. Whatever that may look like, you can send me an email, alex@flipempire.com, and, you know, look forward to potentially building a long-term relationship with you. So have an amazing day. I wish you the best. I'm rooting for you. You got this. You can do this. And I'm here for you and look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, you know, I've had a lot of people recently reach out to me wanting to learn more about Ascend, wanting to understand how the mastermind component works, how the coaching relationship works. And so right now we're actually on a waiting list. But what I would encourage you to do is if you think you're the right fit and you think you could benefit from being a part of our community, head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, watch the short video, and then just click the apply to join button below. And then we'll be in contact with you if and when a spot opens up. So really appreciate you listening to Flip Empire here. And I look forward to connecting with you on the next show. Take care.